You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ, Bucky, Rhett back together. Buck, first of all, where are you still in Jacksonville right now? Where are you at?
I am still in Jacksonville because that game was late. I didn't get back to the hotel room until about 2 o'clock after all the
little baby.
Woo. Woo. Yeah, that's a full night's work. Full night's work there. Why don't we start there, by the way, because we were talking about this a little bit before we started today, and that was ugly, man. Like, just watching that game last night, the Jacksonville offense, and we can go anywhere you want to go, but that was, man, watching that was not a good watch.
No, it was not a good watch. And so, like, let's back up. Let me give full context about the performance. So coming into the game, you had 2 straight losses. You have a slew of injuries on the O-line and at wide receiver. Christian Kirk's not available. And that stuff. You get Jamal Agnew back. You have the quarterback who has been coming off a high ankle sprain. And so you're trying to put all this together. Doug Peterson has been kind of, I guess, sharing play calling duties, or Press Taylor is the play caller. So they're trying, Press Taylor is trying to, like, figure out what to do with what he has. And so the goal was, because it had so many communication issues, hey, let's try and make sure we can get everybody on the same page. You saw them very early in the game lean on the running game, the screen game, using that as an extension of the run. And what they did, they had 2 opportunities early in the game. And what happened, they missed back-to-back long-range field goals. 50-yard-plus, Brandon McManus couldn't convert 2 field goals. I will tell you, for a team that is, the confidence is kind of fragile, when you don't get those points, you then begin to question some stuff. You have another drive where they're about to go in. They have a false start. They have a drop pass, and then Trevor Lawrence is running and drops the ball. It's really been a microcosm of what has plagued the Jaguars all year. Turnovers, pre-snap penalties, and faulty execution in key moments. Then at the end of the half, you have, look, a great throw to Zay Jones, puts you inside the 10-yard line. You have a chance to get a guaranteed 3 points. You can clock it, or you can be aggressive and try and throw it into the end zone to see if you catch the defense napping. Trevor Lawrence does the only thing that you can't do. They throw it. They complete it inbounds, tackle inbounds. Clock runs out. And I can tell you, walking off the field, all the air going out the balloon on the team. No matter what you talk about in the locker room, we can do it or whatever, but the players walking in, slumped shoulders, bowed heads, like, hard to turn that around. Now, there's no direct finger pointing to 16, but you're looking like, man, we had an opportunity to get some points in those things. And you just have a situation where you may have a quarterback that's trying to do too much for an offense that is struggling. And sometimes it's just a bad combination, no matter how talented the quarterback is.
Yeah. How do you have that situational failure as a quarterback and coach who've been together for a little bit now, and as a quarterback who's played a decent amount of football now? This is not Trevor Lawrence's first year. Like, that can't happen. To me, that was, that one play symbolized a lot of issues here. But then I'll be honest, and I'm a Trevor Lawrence fan. I loved him coming out. I talked about how
He's stacked up historically with guys, and he's done some good things. Shoot, I was in the building last year when he brought the team back after he had maybe the worst half of football I've seen from a quarterback. He came back one of the better halves of football, and they end up winning a playoff game. I saw the bad and the good all rolled up into one day. But Buck, I'm watching this game. I'm talking about some terrible misses. Like, you could compile eight throws, like in cuts, seam routes, slants. They're not even close. To the point where I know at the end of the broadcast, they were talking about, is there something wrong with his arm? I'm sitting here going, like, I almost hope there's something wrong with his arm, because I don't know this guy that's this inaccurate. Rhett, I don't know what you saw when you were watching it, but I'm sitting there going, that was my takeaway. That did not look like the Trevor Lawrence that I've seen, you know, the good version of Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate, because it kind of reminded me a little bit of what we see sometimes when we get bad Josh Allen. It reminded me a little bit of, you know, just kind of missing, almost like there was like this overwhelming intention, you know, like more so than what was required to complete a pass, get a first down, and to put it all on your shoulders. And it did feel like that was part of it with Trevor Lawrence in this game. And I think a lot of people, going back to that situational awareness at the end there, you know, taking issue with them not taking, you know, spiking the ball and stopping the clock. I'm like, you know what you're going to run in that situation. I don't have any problem with them snapping it, right? It's just, you can't throw it short of the goal line unless the guy is literally uncovered with nobody around him. So it does feel like there are some things, you know, that make you go, why is this happening with a player of this caliber? Why is this still happening with a player of this caliber? And then, you know, he hits the throw to Agnew and you're like, well, I mean, obviously it was wide open and all that, but when you see him make some of these throws, it makes the ones that you're talking about, DJ, you know, all the more kind of mind-boggling,
baffling,
frustrating.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's a real complicated thing, and it's funny, right? So, at a time where everyone is talking about Justin Fields and that stuff, like, Trevor has always kind of been able to escape some of the criticism. It's only been now that we've seen his name associated with criticism and not necessarily living up to some of the lofty expectations that kind of preceded his arrival in Jacksonville. It'd be interesting to see, because normally what has happened when he kind of hears the criticism, he normally bounced back in a major way. It'd be interesting to see how he plays down the stretch, because no matter what it is, like, it's a three-way tie in the AFC South. No one expected that, but it's a three-way tie between the Jags, the Texans, and the Colts. The Jags hold all the cards when it comes to the tiebreaker. So if they went out and do what they're supposed to do, then they go. But if this team somehow falls apart and doesn't make the postseason, man, you talk about the noise escalating around number 16 and the Jaguars. It'd be interesting stuff to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned when we were talking about before we started about just the number of fumbles too, man. Like, he's just had a ton of fumbles, more than anybody else in football.
Yeah, I think 20 lost fumbles over the last 2 years. I think that's six more than the next guy, which would be Jared Goff. Ball security is an issue. And we all know, man, we're around the game, particularly this year in the National Football League. There are 30 teams that are still in playoff contention. There are more one-score games than we've ever seen. And turnovers are typically the deciding factor. So when your quarterback gives the ball away a ton, it's hard to overcome it. And look, whether it's his fault or not, protection, whatever, quarterback has to take care of the ball when he has it.
I'm curious what you think, Buck, of on the Ravens side of things. Lamar, you know, did his Lamar thing. He had, you know, almost 100 yards rushing. He was extending plays, making things happen. Isaiah Likely has really blossomed since the Mark Andrews injury, which shouldn't be a surprise. They're an organization that, you know, we've talked about it forever. They're a really good scouting organization, and at certain positions, extremely good scouting organization. And tight end is one of them. I mean, they're just constantly just one after another, they get that position rolling. So they found another one there. Lamar is definitely in the MVP conversation for what he's doing. But I want to ask you about the other side of the ball. Talked about some of the Jags' issues. Matabike has another sack. He tied NFL records, like 11 straight games with at least a half sack.
Yep.
So he was doing his thing. But it is, I would say, reminds me of kind of when Rex took over the Ravens defense initially. I was there when that happened, where it went from we're going to line up and play and beat you up and we're better than you, to it's a little bit of organized chaos. Like it causes you to be a little frazzled offensively. I saw it against the Chargers, and I'm sure you saw a little bit of that last night.
A couple things, like number one, here's what I learned from watching the Baltimore Ravens defense. Prior to the draft, when Kyle Hamilton was in the draft, we talked about Kyle Hamilton being one of the top.
He was my fifth player in that draft.
And so here's what I'm learning and what I'm continuing to learn as a scout. Good players typically play well in the National Football League. And so if it's a good player, like sometimes we need to close the notebook before the combine, because Kyle Hamilton is everything that we thought he was going to be when he was at Notre Dame. DJ, he is their best defensive player. And I'm saying that knowing Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen and all those guys are great. He is the linchpin to that defense. He plays down in the box. He does a bunch of different things, whether it's in the slot, coming off the edge. Mike McDonald has unlocked his talent. And so all the things that people took him to task for what he can't do, guess what? He doesn't do those things. He is only doing those things that made him great at Notre Dame. So my thing is, when we get to the draft, and I think we all have to remember how we feel about these players prior to the combine. And even though we'll do a bunch of different shows and we'll talk about these guys a bunch of different ways, that opinion that you initially have on players, more times than not, is correct.
He was the 14th pick, Buck. He fell to them at 14.
Good. I mean, he is a fantastic player. Matt Ibuike, who I remember you being really high on, I thought leading up to the draft, like inside pass rusher and those things. Look, they got him in position where, man, they're stunting and gaming and moving and stemming and doing all those things. And so you talk about the organized chaos. It's organized with the players in mind. It's not just lines on the whiteboard. It's how can I get Calvin Noy to do things that he does well? How can I help Jadeveon Clowney? Jadeveon Clowney is going to have double-digit sacks for maybe only the second time in his career. How can I get Jadeveon Clowney to do what he does? It's a very smart, well-constructed defense that does put – I mean, look, it puts the quarterback under a lot of pressure because they always line seven near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And you just never know who's coming. And a lot of times, it's only four guys coming, and they're free runners to the quarterback.
The one note of concern I'd have for Baltimore now is Keaton Mitchell going down for the rest of the season. You know, just it feels like that group for that team gets beat up more than any in football. Their running back room has had some major injuries the last couple of years. This is another one that didn't look particularly encouraging. And, you know, feel for Mitchell, who had, you know, really taken over in the second half of that game. But I mean, he was getting 10 yards a pop every time they were giving him the ball. So now, you know, you're back to Gus Edwards in Justice Hill. And, you know, it helps when Lamar runs for 97 yards, on 100. So you maybe see a bit more of that, you know, as they try to hang on to that number one seed in the AFC.
No doubt. And they've got a schedule. Go ahead, Buck.
Yeah, let me say this real quick about Baltimore. Because Baltimore on offense, like Todd Monken's done a great job. But what he really has done, he's really become an 8-year-old kid in the basement playing Madden. So what they do with Lamar Jackson, he's running as much as ever. But what they're doing is they're not running him off of traditional runs. It's, hey, Lamar, we're going to send everybody deep. They drop back. If you see a hole, take off.
Yeah.
Basically scrambling for rushing yards as opposed to the way that he was utilized before. And it really puts you in a dilemma because if you play man-to-man, now those runs go the house. If you play zone, there are too many holes in the defense. So they really made the game easy for him by really using him more as a traditional quarterback, but allowing him to run whenever he sees fit.
Yeah, it wasn't him, but I was talking to a defensive coordinator about another young quarterback. I don't even remember who it was, to be honest with you. I don't think it was Fields, but we were talking about the growth of a young quarterback. And he said, no, he's a totally different player. I go, how so? He goes, well, he used to go number one run. He goes, now he goes number one, number two run. So that's like the evolution there. But I was thinking about that while you were talking about it, because it's like, hey, Lamar, number four, like we don't need to worry about getting to number four. If we're that long in the process,
number three
you go. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Rhett, how about Texans Titans? A big win in uniform gate there in that
ball. Oh game. My gosh, the disrespect. Yeah. The Titans, where are the Oilers uniforms playing the Texans? No, I thought it was cool. I thought the literal hat tip to Bum Phillips for Mike Vrabel wearing the cowboy hat was pretty dang cool. Now this division has become super intriguing, and I'm glad we started with Jacksonville, who's, you know, kind of been on a bit of a skid here and now falls to 8-6. By the way, so are the Indianapolis Colts and the Houston Texans here. And the Texans get that way from taking care of business without C.J. Stroud and without Will Anderson.
Yeah.
That's a toughness win. And I thought it was kind of interesting that D'Amico Ryans went to Case Keenum as opposed to Davis Mills, who has been QB2. I think a lot of the talk on the broadcast there was they trusted the decision-making of Keenum a little bit better to keep him in position to win a game like this. And I think it really kind of came to fruition there. Now, we could talk about Keenum, you know, at a really nice game. But the fact is that defense for Houston played out of their minds in this game. And Denzel Perryman and Christian Harris together, I think, played their best game. Anytime that you can limit Derrick Henry to 10 total yards on 20 total touches, which is an NFL record for ineptitude in terms of production, is pretty damn solid. And then, you know, another one that, you know, we talk about like Kyle Van Noy with the Ravens as being a really big, really good pickup. How about Derek Barnett for the Houston Texans that they got after the Eagles sent him packing? He played 35 snaps in this game, was a dominant physical presence on the edge in the absence of Will Anderson, and then comes up with one of the biggest sacks of the game in overtime, pushing Jalen Duncan right into Will Levis's lap. Building your roster, it's never finished. It's always a work in progress. Nick Caserio and company did a great job there. I think, you know, identifying a player that could come in and help them a bunch. But I mean, like, the Texans defense played so well. You got Derrick Henry talking about his future. You know, obviously the Titans are eliminated, you know, with this loss. But I mean, like, he says, definitely today you had that feeling that this could be my last couple of games in a Titans uniform. That's kind of a wow moment. And to do that without, you know, your two franchise cornerstones, pretty special for the Texans, Buck.
Wow. Look, I'll say this about the Texans, and we'll talk about the Colts later. I can't be more impressed with the coaching job that both of these young coaches have done. Like, the job that D'Amico Ryans is doing with the Houston Texans. He is wise beyond his experience as a head coach. Just the buttons that he's been able to push. You tell me that the Houston Texans are going to play without Nico Collins. They already don't have Tank Dell. This was a wide receiver crew that has exceeded expectations with those guys playing. Now you remove two of those guys. You don't have your quarterback in C.J. Stroud, and you continue to win games. Singletary, the running back, Devon Singletary, plays like a different guy than the one that we saw at Buffalo. Dynamic, explosive, scores, all these things. Look, this is a team that, you just talk about like the future being bright. They're just all in on whatever D'Amico Ryans is selling. So look, hat tip to him. And eventually we'll get to a hat tip to Shane Steichen for these guys are doing more with less. I can't say enough about the job that both of those guys have done.
I'll tell you what, I'll give you a quick name here and then we'll take a break as we got a bunch of other stuff to get to. But we've talked about Slowick being a head coaching candidate for the job he's done as the offensive coordinator with Houston Texans, rightfully so. How about Matt Burke getting a little love for what he's done on the defensive side of the ball? And for those who don't know, Matt was with the Eagles during their Super Bowl. He's been kind of a Jim Schwartz guy. He was underneath Jim. He had a year where he was in Philadelphia and he was kind of like an in-between year. So he actually was the coach handling all the situational stuff for Saleh in 2019. I believe it was Saleh at that time. Can't remember who was. Or no, 2021. Yeah, so it would have been Saleh. Just in terms of, you know, timeouts, management, game management, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of a nice little head coach little thing. Now the job he's doing with Houston, he was in Arizona as their D-line coach last year, but he's went to Dartmouth. He's bright. Like he's somebody I would keep an eye on. I don't see his name mentioned a lot with these head coaching gigs, but he's got a presence. He's really smart dude. And he's done a nice job there with D'Amico Ryans, there with the Houston Texans. So I want to give him a little bit of love. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get some more games, but we're going to start with what happened in one of the more lopsided games I've ever seen in my life, which led to a couple terminations. We'll get to that right after this.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
All right, guys. Well, Thursday night, never seen anything like it. It was pretty incredible. It was 42-0. The Raiders were up on the Chargers at halftime, coming off of a week, 4 or 5 days previously, where the Raiders didn't score a single point. They end up hanging 63 on the Chargers. It's the most points the Raiders have ever scored in their history. It's the most points the Chargers have ever allowed in their history. It was a game when it finished, you knew that there were going to be changes coming. It was just going to be what those changes were. The next morning, there's only one of the few times I didn't fly back with the team. I had some family stuff. My daughter was graduating, so I went to Dallas. I did not fly with the team, but man, I was on a red eye, and I was like, you know, I'm going to get a couple hours of shut eye. And then Buck, Rhett, my phone, I mean, it was just ding, 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 ding. And then I thought, well, something's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And looked over, and the Chargers had already announced that, I think it was 8 a.m. West Coast.
Yeah.
That both Brandon Staley and Tom Telesco had been let go as head coach and general manager, respectively. And it wasn't a surprise that happened, coming off of the heels of that performance. And I'm kind of looking at, you know, individually in this game, that wasn't what it was. It was the overall expectations of this team this year, the money that had been spent, which led to these expectations, and then the quarterback not being able to take the next step. And sometimes you think of things, and at the end, it reminds you of something along the way that should have been a warning sign. And I'll get it to you first on this one, but I don't know if you remember us having this conversation. But they had their open practice. So they had Money and myself come just to MC the practice. So we're talking over the loudspeaker. There's a lot of fans there. It's an inter-squad scrimmage. It's really a showcase, right? Mm-hmm. The offense, with their number one offense, it took them 14 plays to get the ball into the end zone. And I remember just sitting there like, this should be like your showcase. And it's Mike Williams, mm-hmm. deep shot. It should be, you know, deep end cuts. Mm-hmm. It should be like kind of that, wow, let's get everybody excited.
Yeah.
And wherever you want to place that blame, whether it's they don't have enough explosive players, whether it's the scheme isn't dynamic enough, it just shouldn't have been that hard. And it was, in looking back on it, it was like, you know what? This team looks, it looks a little older. It looks a little slower. There's not a lot of explosiveness. There's, you know, defensively, they've got all kinds of issues on that side mm-hmm. of the ball. But just that one little snapshot to me, I look back on it and go, man, maybe I should have read more into that.
Yeah, DJ, the thing with the Chargers, I think we always talk about teams and what's their identity. I think if I was pressed and you asked me, close my eyes and envision a LA Charger game and what it looks like, I don't really know if I can understand their style. Like, they're not necessarily a grinded out team. They're not explosive and dynamic and maybe fun and creative like the Miami Dolphins. And so they kind of fall in that in between. You know, they have good players. You know, they have a good quarterback. You know, they have defensive pieces that should lead to the defensive unit being good. But I just don't know what that identity is. And look, it pains me because Tom Telesco is like a personal friend. He's been a friend of the show. You know him well. I know him well.
He's a good friend. Yeah.
You know, and so I can't really say that like the individual pieces don't work because they're talented. I just don't know where it's lost in translation, because you would think that this team would be better because they have good players. They just haven't played well for whatever reason.
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest one, obviously, DJ, you talked about it, the quarterback not taking the next step. And like, and you know that, you know, Brandon Staley's got a defensive emphasis, but I think we all kind of thought that this was a really smart hire and bringing Kellen Moore in, right? Yeah. To run the offense. He thought that maybe like this would be something to allow us to see the full spectrum of Justin Herbert's talents. And, you know, obviously, you know, you wonder how much injuries play a role in a season like this sometimes. I mean, Herbert's has seemingly been, you know, banged up in some way, shape, or form for much of this season. You know, Keenan Allen misses time, Mike Williams down for the year. And then, you know, the Austin Eckler thing is kind of interesting. I mean, almost look back on that with that whole kind of, you know, is he going to be here? Is he not going to be here thing? It's like, you know, did the Chargers actually see something there? You know, because he has not been as productive, you know, certainly in the run game, still gets some, you know, some receptions, gets his hands on the ball that way. But man, it's just, you know, it's like they... It's kind of baffling. And again, it's like the second time I'll bring it back to the Bills. And like, you're wondering, like, this team is better than it should be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it's, mm-hmm. it's not as good as it should be right now. You know, they're better on paper than they are in the win loss column. So I think, you know, a lot of times when that stuff happens, yeah. I mean, it's like, all right, well, clearly we've got the players, you know, we've seen the players make these types of plays that we can win with on a regular basis. When they're not, where else do we go with the blame other than the coach, you know, and the GM?
Well, I think that's part of it is you're paying stars. And you see this, I see this in baseball as a baseball fan as well. Mm-hmm. When you're playing stars and stars get hurt, in other words, when you miss Mike Williams for the whole season and he's making $20 million bucks a year, like, they didn't have the organizational depth to replace what he brought. Corey Linsley gets hurt. Yeah. That's a big drop off for them. And that's kind of the nerve center of their offensive line. I still thought there was enough talent in place, even without those guys, that they should have been better offensively. Defensively, it's complicated because they J.C. Jackson was a miss. And then you have, you know, you look at the secondary and you're like, okay, you don't really have a big time corner anywhere on the roster. The linebacker position, they're not a good coverage group there. But so you can say, okay, well, they're going to lose some individual one-on-one matchups. But yet when you watch the tape, more than physical beats, it's just, they're just blown. Like, there's just guys running scot-free. It's not like, you're just faster than me, you're better than me, you caught a ball over the top of my head. It's, who the heck is covering that guy? There's nobody even in the vicinity of him. So there was a lot of issues there. And as I've said many a time this year, nobody gets hit with the right hand more than the Chargers. Mm-hmm. You know, when most teams are trying to take away your best player, they allow your best player to eat like it's, you know, Thanksgiving. So they just, it wasn't well put together and coordinated there. But I will say, I'm looking at the future here, Buck. Going into next year, Khalil Mack with a cap hit of 38.5, Joey Bosa 36, Keenan Allen 34, Mike Williams 32. They're already like, they're $44 million, I believe, over the cap for next year. So this was a push in year. So to me, we'll see what they end up doing with these two hires. But to me, this feels like, hey, let's strip it down a little bit before we build back up. And you're going to have to, you know, hopefully you can trade some of these guys. If not, you're going to end up releasing some of them. And then it's going to be imperative now that you've paid the quarterback, as we always say, Buck, hey, third, fourth, fifth, sixth round, you got to find some starters in there, man. You've got to find, you know, the days of being able to pay your center that much money are over. We got to find a center in the fourth round that can be a good player for us. Like, those types of things, that's going to be what the future looks like. They got to draft their butts off.
Yeah. DJ, like, because you're so close to it, I don't want to get you in trouble, but if you could tell me, like, as the czar, like, how do you think the Chargers should play? Like, looking at the division, and looking at what you have that are staples, you know, the quarterback's going to be there, some of the other pieces. Like, what do you think stylistically their approach should be when it comes to the way that they play on the field and the players that you have to bring in to fit that style?
Well, they need some juice. They need juice at receiver to add to the mix. They need somebody that can give you some explosives at receiver. They need juice in the backfield. They don't have that right now. So, you know, the tight end position, that's like the trifecta to me. And I like Everett. Everett's a good player. But they need speed. They need to get younger. They need to get faster. And that's how they need to forge an identity. Because right now, especially with Mike Williams out, Mike Williams is a huge part of their identity. Because their identity is our receivers are a basketball team. Josh Palmer's a good player. He's going to be, you know, he's missed a bunch of time this year as well. But that has been their identity. It has been, Keenan and Mike and Josh are all physical guys. But now you lose two of those three for a big chunk of the season, Mike for almost all the season. And now you're left with, okay, now we don't have any speed and now we can't play bully ball on the outside. So to me, they've got a couple good young pieces on the offensive line. They need to continue to keep going there. But I think to me, the quarterback is a freak show in terms of the arm talent. So get him some guys that can feature that a little bit, guys that can stretch out. And so to me, those three skill positions, and I mean, we'll see what they end up doing. But that to me is the overriding thing offensively, Buck, is they're too slow. They've got to get more explosive.
Well, and the other thing that I would just say on this front is like when you're identifying a head coach, and I think, you know, a lot of times when you've got a special talent at quarterback, you're like, all right, we need to surround him with a bunch of quarterback voices, right? Well, I mean, obviously that didn't work out so well in Carolina. But there's been other places where that has worked. However, I would say this team more than anything, because there is talent there, needs to have the best leader of men, not necessarily a guy that's going to specialize on one side of the ball, but one of those like real CEO head coach types, game managers, you know, guys that can understand the situations, understand what's going to put us in the best possible scenario to win games and to finish games late. And you talk about all these close games that the Chargers are in.
Yeah.
Gotta have somebody who's going to be able to flip those on the winning side for the most part. So like more so than, hey, this is the next great offensive genius, or hey, this is the next great defensive genius. You need a team genius with.
Yeah. Two quick things here, and I won't belabor the point here and we can move on. But like the first name that popped into my mind was Dan Quinn as a coach who's been to a Super Bowl. He's had head coaching experience. Mm-hmm. You think about the successful head coaches the Chargers have had in their history.
Yeah.
Marty Schottenheimer had been a head coach. North Turner had been a head coach. Bobby Ross had been a head coach. So I think to me, having somebody who's worn that hat before is huge. The other side of it that I think you got to have that debate and that discussion is Herbert. Now, man, he's cycled through a lot of different coaches, offensive coordinators, quarterback coaches, and it was at Oregon and it's happened here with the Chargers and not having the ability to settle in. And that's why I think when you look at offensive minded head coaches who can hopefully build with him and be with him, as opposed to a defensive head coach. And now that offensive coach, you get up and running and boom, he gets a head coaching job next year. And here we go again. He's got to go through another change. So that's going to all be part of the calculus there of what they do as a head coach. I do want to say, as we move on here, Buck, you mentioned it. Tom Telesco's ended up really being one of my best friends. I mean, he is an awesome dude who it works his butt off and put a lot into this team, and they added a lot of talent over the years. And just, you know, came up short in the postseason last year. I think if you win that game, then you get more opportunity. And you can maybe they all, you know, he's able to survive this year. But anyways, he's been not only good to the show, he's been really good to me individually. He is a good dude. And so I'm excited for his future to see what he ends up doing. And I got to know Brandon Staley pretty well as well over the last couple of years. And you know, the guy that you see out front that I think got labeled as, you know, arrogant and it all happened too fast for him, defiant, whatever term you want to use. I've sat and had dinner with him on the road. I got to talk to him each and every week in our interviews. Couldn't have been nicer. He's a good dude too, man. Maybe it did happen fast for him. Hopefully he gets an opportunity to kind of work his way and build his way back up. He's a young guy. And he is we always talk about football stuff. I also look at it from this dude's he's a good guy. He's a good father. He's a good husband. He's got a nice young family. And I think sometimes that gets lost when this guy's out, this guy's in. Yeah. It's like, these are people, man. These are people too. When you think about that. So anyways, wanted to get that in there. We can keep moving here. I know, Rhett, you've got to scoot here pretty quick. So why don't you get to your next.
Do you mind first?
We'll sure. We'll jump around here.
Yeah. All right. So Browns Bears, and this was a strange game, you know, because it's again one of those games where you've got people like, all right, Justin Fields, here we go. You know, builds a 17-7 lead going into the fourth quarter. I mean, the third quarter was an absolute disaster for the Browns. You know, you had a pick six, Flacco threw, and you had, you know, I think he threw two of his interceptions in the third quarter. He ends up throwing three in a game. But man, I mean, like, what's the thing that people said about Joe in Baltimore? He's Joe Cool, man. He is just like, he is the most unfazed player perhaps in NFL history. Like, it'd be a real tight race between he and Eli Manning, guys who just let everything just wash right over them, and they come out totally fine. Like, they, you could tell him, you could yell out, you could do whatever you want. He's like, it's cool. I'm going to go out there. As long as I got another series, we got another chance. Yeah. And so that's what I thought was really cool. And like, the symmetry of this was kind of funny. I mean, they're down 17-7 going into the fourth quarter. Last fourth quarter comeback of Joe Flacco's career was in Cleveland as a member of the Jets.
That's right.
Early in the season, which is kind of funny to think about. I mean, like, some of the, again, I think the first time he started, we had this conversation, like, he might be 38 years old. That dude has not lost a single iota off his fastball in terms of arm talent. Mm-hmm. Like, he still can throw it anywhere he wants to throw it. The deep ball is as good as any in the league. And the throw he made to Amari Cooper on the deep over route was as competitively arrogant as I think we've seen this season. I mean, it was like three guys had a shot to pick the ball off. Somehow it slips in between all of them. Amari Cooper ends up turning up field and going down to score and make it 17-7 and tie the thing up. And then, look, here's the other thing that we'll say about Joe Flacco, and it's probably part of the reason why he's no longer with some of the teams that he was at, is that he puts the ball in peril. Like, he makes some throws where you're like, and there was a few of them in this game and a couple of them in overtime that might have gotten him. But again, he's like, all right, you know what? That didn't go well. Next one, bang, and leads them down there. And they find a way to get that field goal and go up and win that game. I mean, thank goodness that there was a drop on a Hail Mary that might have ended the fun for the Browns. The Bears should have won the game on the last play on the Hail Mary, but they dropped it still. But look, Flacco gives him a chance, Bucky. That's what I'll say about what he does for the Browns.
Yeah, like, he does give them a chance, and he also gives them confidence. Like, there's a belief that this team has that with the veteran, with his experience, that he's going to help them win games. And that is just enough to embolden that defense to play at a high level. When I look at their defense, and it's funny because I've been able to watch the two top defenses in back-to-back weeks. They go about their business in different ways. Baltimore, we talked about a little smoke and mirrors, a little organized chaos. The Browns are just, hey, man, we're better than you. We're not going to mess around. Like, we got the best pass rusher in football. We're going to put him in a wide nine, let him go. We're going to play man-to-man outside, and we're going to say we're going to bring an additional guy. And, oh, DJ, J-O-K is every bit as good as we thought he would be coming out, having the chance to watch him up close and personal. This dude is an animal. And they don't even say, hey, he's a safety. No, he's a linebacker. He's going to play linebacker. He gets that. And it's just another example. Like, sometimes we outsmart ourselves and saying, hey, he's this and that. The guy is what he does on tape, and Jim Schwartz and his defense, they allow him to get after it. This is a really good Browns team, and the quarterback has just stabilized them enough to give them a chance to make some noise in the tournament.
Just when they need it, DJ, because in the fourth quarter, they were without four of their five starting offensive linemen. Of the five, in addition to the other injuries that they've had at the running back spot and all that. So just keep that in mind, too.
What, JOK, was that 2020?
Yeah, I feel like it was the COVID draft where he had that. Yeah. I mean, that kickoff still flashes in my mind from when he's running down on kickoff against Duke in that opener. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Trying to find this.
Yeah.
Was it 2021 or 2020?
Yeah, it was 21. Mm-hmm. 21.
Yeah, because I didn't see him in 2020. Let me look up 2021 because this is, I always am.
Well, it was one of those picks because it was the Cleveland draft. It was the Cleveland draft.
He had the heart issue, right? Which, he was my 15th overall player.
We all had him in the first round.
15th?
Yeah.
We all had him in the first round.
The notes, off-ball, fluid, twitchy, run and chase, some stand up on the edge, they'll run games, he can cover in the flat, he can cover tight ends, he beats blockers to spots, extremely fluid. It was just that heart thing, right? If I'm remembering
whatever the injury, it was an illness or an injury. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, he had that, but I just remember, like, even the conversation was still about, like, hey, is he safe? Do we have to move him from linebacker to safety with the back of the side? Because he wasn't the old school.
There was a tweener thing. Yeah,
but I can tell you, man, that dude plays like his hair's on fire. And DJ, when he hits people to hurt. Like he hit somebody near the sideline in front of me, and I was like, "Oh, I cringe." You know, I clutched my pearls, like, "Oh, I don't come too far beyond the white line." Like, nastiness to him that you like, and I'm telling you, playing the Browns up there in the dog pound, they play with an edginess to them that is beyond belief. This look is a really well constructed defense with high end players, and Grant Delpit, who just signed the extension, he's even been better than I think some people thought because there were some questions about his physicality and tackling. Yeah, I think sometimes peer pressure can make you become a more physical player because you don't want to be the guy that's singled out in those film room sessions.
All right, I'm gonna cut Rhett loose, not so he can follow Tom Allen to Penn State. I'm gonna let him handle some other business.
Tom Allen, yes.
Yeah, there he goes.
There we go.
All right, boys. All right. Have you guys? By the way, who did you hire? Did you guys hire anybody?
Yeah, Kurt Cignetti, JMU.
Oh yeah. That's right. I like that hire.
Coach Sig. All right.
Yeah, light him up. Coach Sig. Go on your way. We want Ohio State. I thought that was a bad move, but anyways, go ahead. See you. all right. So let's jam through these games, Buck. We've kind of taken some time here. We can kind of go a little more rapid fire here. Here's a funny story. So the Bills, they beat the Cowboys 31-10. So I don't know if I told you this story from last week.
Yes, you told me. You picked and then you changed them. You came off your pick. He did you a solid because you would have had the exact score, and then you came back and you tweaked it. Yeah, you had the right thing.
I sent in 31-30 Buffalo, and it got posted on the YouTube page as 31-10 Buffalo, and the Cowboy fans were wearing me out. This idiot. And then a couple of them I went through and I liked them last night. I was just curious to go back to read some of these tweets. If that was the score, I'll delete all my social media. So I sent Shoppy a text. I'm like, dude, you're killing me, man. I said 31-30, not 31-10. And then what's the final score of the game? 31-10. I should have just let it ride. It would have been the greatest prediction that I didn't make of all time.
So, DJ, we've said this, and I said this watching the Bills. Do not allow the Buffalo Bills to get into the postseason. Yeah. Because when you reset the records to 0-0, all of the confidence that they will have built to get into it makes them a very dangerous team. They're dangerous because the quarterback is a one-man show. And DJ, what the Bills have discovered,
James Cook. Yeah, no question. I went through and watched all those explosives, Buck. So the offensive line played really well too. Morse pulls on one of them. They're pulling like crazy. Dawkins pulls on another one of the explosives. Spencer Brown, the right tackle, working up to the linebacker. They pull Brown. They pull Brown again. The burst, the change of direction, they run a nifty little counter. It's just kind of everything's just going laddering. All of a sudden, boom, foot in the ground, and he's coming back the other way, a little misdirection. But he looks just like his brother. He looks just like a young Dalvin Cook. The way he's moving. It's eerie. It's eerie how similar they looked. But the offensive line, I think their offensive line is built more to run than they are to pass protect.
I think so, too. And I think in discovering the run, what they will do is they'll unlock the big plays in the passing game because they'll get people out of those two high looks. They'll get more one-on-one coverage, which will create opportunities for Stephon Diggs to get loose. And what they also would do by running the ball, they'll be able to distract people where Josh Allen will be a more effective runner. It's a team that, look, seasons are long, winding roads. They're kind of coming into their own at the right time. And DJ, there's an opportunity for the team to find itself as the AFC East champion if they just take care of their business down the stretch. Miami has a tough slate coming up. So it's there for the Buffalo Bills to get in. If they get in, heaven help anybody who has to face them in the postseason.
So I was thinking about this, and this is I think because of our age and growing up in the same era, you'll be with me on this. Is there a lyric when you're watching the Cowboys? Is there a 80s, 90s rap lyric from Public Enemy that gets in your head when you watch the Cowboys?
Oh, don't believe the hype.
can't trust it. Can you just hear Flavor Flav? Can you just hear Flavor Flav? Every time I watch it, can't trust it.
You know, it's, man, just when they lure you in, right? they become the talk of the town. They become the talk of what everyone is saying. This team can do it. This team is going to go to the Super Bowl, yada, yada, yada. They let you down. And, you know, the one thing about it is to win in the NFC long term, they're going to have to be able to beat the bullies. And right now, when people make it a line of scrimmage game, a game where it's about toughness and physicality, the Cowboys have not been able to weather the storm. Until they're able to beat people up in these tightly contested physical affairs, they won't be able to represent the AFC, because you're going to have to deal with Detroit, San Francisco. Look, Philadelphia is taking a step back, but still you got to deal with Philly. If Philly decides that they want to be the physical ball club again, they can make life miserable for the Cowboys. The Cowboys have to figure that. And there's no way to kind of like, hey, wipe this one away. The Buffalo Bills had their way with them. And when people see that James Cook ran for 170.
What do you think Kyle Shanahan thinks when he watches that tape?
With Christian McCaffrey
and their offensive line.
They're just going to line up, and teams are going to line up, and they're going to run it at them, and they're going to see, hey, man, can you answer the question? It ain't execution. It's going to be effort and toughness.
They ran one of those right at Micah Parsons, and he just dipped right underneath the block, and it was like, oh, that was easy. Just capture the edge. Jabril Cox got wiped off the face of the earth on one of them by Spencer Brown, and then Dawkins, the left tackle, that play made its circulation on social media of him driving, I don't even remember who it was, driving some dude into the end zone. Mm-hmm. But and I'm sitting here going, like, the Buffalo Bills, if the Niners are a 10, the Bills are a 6. Like, this is a whole nother level that you're going to get moved around by that group.
Yeah, a whole nother level. And so you have to get ready. So for the Dallas Cowboys, they got to go back to the drawing board. For the Buffalo Bills, they have to continue to keep on building on what they displayed. But the discovery of the running game, when you can win with Josh Allen throwing for fewer than 100 yards, oh, man, you got all kinds of stuff that you can build.
Did you see his analogy? Did you see his analogy?
Yeah.
That was classic. Like, I got an A on a group project. I didn't even do anything.
But look, give him credit for being able to, like,
self-aware, man. He's a freaking so likable, man, because he has high highs and he has some low lows. But he doesn't hog all the credit, and he's quick to own all the blame. Like, that's what you want from your quarterback, man. All right, we can keep it scooting here. Bengals, Vikings. Man, that was an interesting one, huh?
Yeah, it was interesting because the Vikings were up 17-3. They were dominating the wave. Brian Flores in the defense was really making life difficult for Jake Browning. But here's what I'll say, and everyone will talk about Jake Browning and how well he's played. He has played well. But I would also say, the Bengals supporting cast makes it where a backup quarterback can thrive. Like, when you have superior talent on the outside, it just makes the job a lot easier for the quarterback to have success. Zach Taylor, it took him a couple of weeks to figure out how to play with Jake Brown, but what they've done is screen game, vertical game, being able to just put the players in isolated situations and encourage Browning to make those throws. T. Higgins just took it over, because that was a no. Great catch. Touchdown. To go up. Talent. Browning has the edge. He's been smart with the ball, but their players and the talent that they've kind of put on that offensive lineup allows him to play well and allows this offense to continue to thrive without Joe Burrow.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Vikings, from where they were with kind of the feel-good story with Josh Dobbs not that long ago, Nick Mullins in this game, look, he threw for 300 yards and a couple touchdowns, but did have the two picks. But we were talking about, man, they might have found a cheap quarterback of the future with Dobbs. Maybe he's going to cost half as much as what Cousins is going to get. Now, I think kind of watching this team play out and knowing how your team's built, Jordan Addison had a great game in this game with two touchdowns, obviously with Jefferson. To me, Kirk he's not going anywhere. Like, they've got to figure out a way to make that work.
Well, I think after playing with other quarterbacks, Kevin O'Connell probably has a higher valuation of Kirk Cousins over some of the other guys, because without Kirk Cousins, he's limited in terms of how much of the playbook he can use. Kirk gave him that ability to do it. And when you look at this team and you look at the strides that they've made with the defense and those things, like, they appear to be ready. The big thing will be going forward, how do they continue it if Brian Flores isn't there? The defense has been really put together. They played well. I don't know why they fell apart at the end. And looking at it, I mean, just some unfortunate plays, and Browning got hot with T. Higgins making plays, but the defense has played well. If you lose that piece, can they continue to be a top defense while Kevin O'Connell is really working with this offense to get it continue to play at a high level. But I do like the combination of Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson for the foreseeable future. Two route runners that can get open against any coverage. Those pieces look great. You just got to figure out how you continue it with the quarterback and then what you're going to do with the defense if Flores isn't available.
No doubt. All right, Bucks. Hey, they beat the Packers 34-20. This is a Baker Mayfield game. 381 yards, four touchdowns. Went back and watched his tape, Buck. Getting guys out in the route. A lot of empty, just getting five out as well out of the backfield. Letting him process quickly, get the ball out. He made some, you talk about, we talked to Flacco a little earlier, making some kind of confident throws, borderline cocky throws. Baker played that way. He fit some balls in tight windows, some seam balls that were impressive, like triangle defenders, full confidence, let it rip, get it in there. We talked about the Bengals and their receiving corps that they have. Even though it's getting a little bit older there in Tampa, Mike Evans can still get open. He's a huge target. They did a nice job working him. Chris Godwin had 10 for a buck 55 in this game. So they did a nice job. Rashad White can run it. He can catch it out of the backfield as well. So they've got some nice pieces around him. How about our friend Jason Light? Baker Mayfield is 28 years old. You know what his cap hit is this year and considering the way he's playing? $1.7 million. That's his cap hit this year on a one-year deal. I think it was like a one-year, like $4 million deal, basically. I mean, what a bargain basement find there for a guy who, we didn't know more than overall pick. Like, you knew you had, you have talent. I mean, we say, well, okay, maybe he should have been the 10th pick or the 20th pick. That dude was a first overall pick. You get him, he's playing for you in his prime as a 28-year-old with experience in this league at $1.7 million on the cap.
And that's why you always kick the tires on guys who are drafted high, because a change of scenery, a new environment, right coaching staff, right scheme can unlock him. The trick will be next year. What does he go? He can't go from 1.7 million. He can't go to 50 million.
Jason tweeted out the image of going of this. I was like, I think he's telling himself he's going to have to pay the guy. He's going to have to pay him.
But look, I'll say this, DJ, and I do wonder sometimes, like with pro coaches and players, like, the coaches watch college tape, because when Baker Mayfield was at his best at Oklahoma, it was very similar to the way that he played against the Green Bay Packers. Get everybody out, get the ball out quickly, let them have it, let them deal, let them control it. We talked about Joe Burrow and how the Bengals have been at their best when they run a variation of LSU's offense where, hey, put it on me to see it and I'll deal or whatever. Baker Mayfield is very similar because he had all of that control in Lincoln Riley's offense at Oklahoma. The Buccaneers, if they can find some consistency offensively to go with what is still a pretty good defense, they can win the division. It'd be interesting to see how this plays out with them and the New Orleans Saints, and the Atlanta Falcons kind of took a step back, battling out down the end to figure out who's going to be the winner of that division.
Yeah, not a great day for the Packers. They lose, but let's get the positive here. The rookies, Dontayvion Wicks, 6 for 97. Tucker Kraft, 4 for 57 and a touchdown. Jaden Reed, 6 for 52 and a touchdown. It might not end. This season might not end up going the way the Packers were hoping it was going to go, but it's still a success in my mind because the quarterback's been solid and they have all of these first and second year players who are doing good things and look like real key pieces of this team moving forward. So a loss for the Packers, but I'm not going to be discouraged, and you shouldn't be either if you're a Packer fan. We've got one more to get to here, Buck. Colts-Steelers in a beatdown. Colts win 30-13.
You know, what's crazy about this is the Packers were, the Pittsburgh Steelers were up. They were dominating the game early in the game. And here's what I say. It's funny because you mentioned Chris Godwin having 10 for a buck 50. I think his wife had come out and talked about Todd Bowles and disrespect and relied to about touches and those things. And, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. But next week he gets a ton of catches, a ton of opportunities, and he cashes in. Well, there's been some conversation in Pittsburgh about George Pickens and Deontay Johnson, all those guys, opportunities, I need the ball or whatever. The game actually turned on Mitchell Trubisky trying to force a pass to George Pickens, trying to give him a chance to make a play, a 50-50 ball. He doesn't come down with it. It's intercepted. And from that point on, the Indianapolis Colts absolutely donkey kicked the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran the football at will. They ran the football with Trey Sermon and some other guys, like, just kind of mixing in. And Shane Steichen, they lose Michael Pittman. And what we talk about, DJ, and we talked about how the Indianapolis Colts are like the great experiment, how they took these collection of freak athletes and drafted them without necessarily great tape. or significant, but just great athletes that they were going to put on the coaches to develop them. DJ, the coach has done a really good job developing all these young, unheralded players. I mean, they had DJ Montgomery come in and make plays, score a touchdown. He was on practice squad. He'd been elevated, got an opportunity. And Shane Steichen has kind of unlocked whatever that recipe is to developing young players. They're developing those guys, and they're putting them on the field. And when we talk about front office and coaching staff working together, when you go about, hey, this is how we're going to do it, they're doing it, and it's worked out. And give them credit. Garner Minshew, who I watched here in Jacksonville, kind of up and down, Steichen yeah. has done a good job of managing him. He still is prone to make some turnovers and those things, but he's done a good job putting the quarterback in a situation to be successful.
Yeah, and having experience with him in the past in Philly, I think, helps, because you have a knowledge of what he can and can't do, and you can put him in a position to be successful. You're not trying to feel that out through the year. Ooh, man, oh, wait, don't do that. Do this. They kind of knew what his strengths and weaknesses were, and that helped when he was thrust into action. All right, Buck, we've jammed through these games. The ones we didn't have a chance to get to, the Jets got just smashed by the Dolphins, 30-0. Dominant performance there for Miami.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with that. Yeah, a lot of finger point. Not good.
Chiefs get back. They get right against the Patriots, 27-17. Giants and Saints. Giants kind of lifeless in that one. Good win for the Saints, 24-6. Hey, how about the Panthers getting a win over the Atlanta Falcons? Is there a team that's done less with more offensively than the Atlanta Falcons, by the way?
I know, man.
I know
it's the frustration for everyone. People are trying to understand why Jonnu Smith gets the ball as opposed to Kyle Pitts and those things. You just don't know. It's just one of those things that it kind of plays out the way that it plays out.
Yeah, Rams, they keep rolling. I mean, I'll tell you what, we talk about coaches of the year. Nobody mentioned Sean McVay. They get into the tournament with what the expectations were. He should be in the mix for that. He is really, I mean, not a shock to anybody. He is one of the elite coaches in this league. Niners, how about the Cardinals? Put up a fight, scored 29 points, but the Niners too much. And they're going to have they might be like the Heisman where you have, you know, you kind of split the vote. They might end up costing Purdy and McCaffrey the MVP because they're going to end up splitting the vote between the two of them. And somebody, some third party is going to sneak in there and end up winning that thing. But those guys are both playing at an elite level. And then in a game that featured Sean Payton, just looked like he was just going after Russell Wilson on the sideline in that game. That hot ride came to a little bit of a halt there as they got handled by the Lions.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily like the way that plays out. Like, it's one thing to have an incident or whatever like that. You know, all the cameras are always going to be on. Sean Payton knows all the cameras are going to be on me undressing that, unless it's a message, not just to Russell, but to the rest of the team. To me, like, it's a fine line between like demanding and demeaning. And it almost looked like he was demeaning Russell Wilson in front of the crew.
Yeah, I didn't care for it either. All right, we'll be back with 5 more episodes this week. So we're going to have a bunch more content coming your way. 6-show week, which I think might be a first for us. We have the video show. That is 4 p.m. on Tuesday. That's 4 p.m. Pacific. That's on the NFL Fast Channel. So a lot more football coming your way. Appreciate you guys hanging with us next time. And we'll see you tomorrow right here on Move the Sticks.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah!
and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.